You're listening to On the Vine, a podcast about Ivy League basketball, brought to you by IvyHoopsOnline.com.
No super fancy introduction from us this week. Welcome to a special Tuesday edition of On the Vine, a podcast about Ivy League basketball, brought to you by the folks here at IvyHoopsOnline.com. I'm your host, Peter Andrews, and I'm joined by a rather interesting panel. We got some great guests on today to discuss the postseason in college basketball, which kicks off tonight with the, in fact, as we speak, I believe we're kicking off with the play-in games. But what really matters, the Ivy schools are in the postseason, and we will get to all that tonight. Firstly, I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Mike Tony, the editor-in-chief of IvyHoopsOnline.com. Mike, how's it going?
Excellent, Peter. Great to be with you on a Tuesday for once.
It's great for me, too. I'm Tuesday, I'm not usually free at this time, and I won't say how I'm free, because I get in trouble with my contracts professor. we're joined tonight on rather short notice. Thanks so much to Robert Crawford for joining us. Robert, how's it going?
It's going very well. Happy to be here. Best time of the year, so couldn't be happier.
And our most special guest today joins us from Texas. He is a Baylor blogger for the Dallas Morning News. He's also a student at Baylor. He's written for just about any publication you can imagine talking about the Bears. We're very excited to have on the show Shehan Jayaraje. How's it going today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for entering into enemy territory here to talk tournament. Big game tomorrow.
Happy to do it.
So on Thursday, so we got three postseason games to talk about. In order of importance, that's Columbia against Norfolk State in the CIT. We've got Yale versus Baylor, which we'll devote most of the show to, and that's on Thursday. We've also got Princeton will be in the NIT on Wednesday against Virginia Tech. And Robert, just I know I'm missing. What postseason term is Harvard in this year?
Unfortunately, Harvard is not in the postseason this year, much to your delight, I imagine.
Yes, otherwise I would not have called attention to it in this fashion.
I know.
All right, that's enough. No more talking about Harvard. They didn't make the tournament or anything. So let's start with the preview of the Baylor-Yale game, which is a big game. Baylor gets a 5 seed, Yale the 12 seed. The game's in Providence, Rhode Island, a pretty good matchup for Yale, I think. But Shehan will know a lot more about it. Can you start by telling me a little bit about what kind of basketball team Baylor is?
Well, Baylor is one of the more efficient offenses in the country, even though sometimes watching them play, you wouldn't realize. They are a really balanced squad. Torian Prince is really the keynote guy on that squad. He's a 6'8 wing. He averages nearly 16 a game, and he's the kind of player, athletically and physically, who probably is going to be a first-round NBA draft pick next year. So he's really the guy to keep an eye on. He's not, per se, a natural scorer, but he's really learned how to use his length and his strength down low and on the perimeter as well to really force mismatches on teams. And I think against a team like Yale, you know, that is a little bit more traditional of a team that maybe doesn't have the same level of athleticism, he's the kind of player who's really going to be one to watch. But he's not the only guy. Four guys on this team average double figures. That would be Torian, Al Freeman, Rico Gathers, Jonathan Motley. And really, Baylor is able to do it in a lot of different ways. They have guys who can shoot on the perimeter. They have guys who can attack the basket. Jonathan Motley is a 6'9 big man who really plays bigger than 6'9 when he's going. So I think that's going to be the toughest test for Yale, is trying to match up with all those pieces on offense.
So can you talk me a little bit through, you know, we don't follow the Big 12 very closely. How did conference play go for Baylor? Where do they finish in terms of their conference tournament? Is there momentum going to the postseason? Do they struggle down the stretch? What can you tell us about the recent play?
Well, looking at the Big 12 this year, the Big 12 was, in my opinion at least, the best conference in the country this year. Baylor had 11 losses this year, and just to give you some sort of scope of how good this conference was, 9 of them were to teams that are top 3 seeds in the NCAA tournament. And outside of that, 5 of the losses came to either Oklahoma or Kansas, who are who were both number one overall in the country at some point this season. So if that gives you some sort of scope, you know, Baylor, I think, finished with the fourth toughest strength of schedule in the country, just because of how tough the conference was. So in terms of going into the tournament, they actually ended the regular season on a losing streak, but it was a losing streak to number two Kansas at the time, number six Oklahoma, and 10 West Virginia. So it's kind of hard to obviously parse through what that means. They did win a game in the conference tournament to make it to the semifinal over Texas, but then they ended up losing again to number one Kansas. So they're on a little bit of a slide, but their play hasn't been on a slide. Their play has been improving. It's just that they've been running into these elite teams that, I mean, because that's the thing. Baylor's not a title contender, but they're a team that takes care of business against the teams they're supposed to be. But they also lose to the teams that they should probably lose to. So I think they're in a good spot, but they're definitely not in a great spot.
What can you tell us about specifically the way that Baylor plays basketball? What's their offensive style and what's their defensive style?
Right. So Scott Drew on defense, who's Baylor's coach, he's a real proponent of the zone. He has kind of a very fluid 1-3-1 that transitions to a 2-3. It's been a type of defense that's really served him well in the tournament and in season play the past couple of years, obviously, with the exception of last year when Baylor was a first round out. But other than that, it's really a tough defense to prepare for on short notice because it's really swarming. There's a lot of length. But at the same time, the defense has taken a step back this season. Baylor actually finished last in the Big 12 in field goal defense and three-point defense. So we'll have to see how that transitions to playing against, you know, different opponents who maybe haven't prepared for the zone in the same way that Big 12 teams know how. But that's really what Baylor wants to do on defense. On offense, you know, they're really good when they push the tempo. They're really good when they force turnovers. But traditionally, they have been a kind of slow-it-down half-court team. You know, they like to move the ball. They like to share the ball. For a while, they led the NCAA in assists per game until they really got into the meat of Big 12 play and things started to kind of fall apart on offense. But again, because they have so many options, because really all five players on the court can score at any one time, they really are a team that likes to slow it down and spread it out because they know that they can beat teams with their skill and with their athleticism.
Let me open it up to Mike and Robert if you have any questions about Baylor that I have overlooked.
Sure. Well, I think the most intriguing matchup to me is Baylor's offense against Yale's defense. It's really strength on strength. Baylor is, you know, according to Ken Palm, Baylor ranks 13th in the nation in adjusted offensive efficiency, and then you flip that around on defense, and Yale ranks 21st. So you've got essentially two top 20 teams on that side or on that end of the floor. I mean, if the Bears are successful on that end of the floor against a similarly good rebounding team, a team that likes to play man as Yale does, I mean, what do you see that entailing? Or conversely, what troubles have the Bears run into at that end of the floor throughout the season?
Yeah, well, really, Baylor's offense flows through their point guard, Lester Medford. And to give you a little bit of scope of Medford, Medford was actually the starting shooting guard last year next to Kenny Cherry. So he's a guy who, in the past, has really looked for a shot. But this year, he really has kind of bought into the being the point guard. But one thing that he has struggled with is really kind of pounding the ball at the top of the floor and not getting it out of his hands and trying too hard to be the playmaker. And within that, you know, you can really kind of tell the games that Baylor's going to win and the games that Baylor's going to lose by their turnover ratio. Because Medford did finish as one of the better players in the country. I think I saw yesterday he had like a 2-7 assist to turnover ratio, which is great. But a lot of those assists were coming against the lesser competition, and a lot of the turnovers were coming against the better competition. So that's really one of the big keys to me is trying to keep the ball moving, because if you see Baylor's offense start to stagnate is when you really start to see them lose their efficiency. And I think that that's really, on offense, the key for Baylor is to get everybody involved, is to get Torian Prince shots, because he's a guy who isn't a natural scorer, so it isn't always force the issue. And the other guy is Jonathan Motley, who has been starting the past couple weeks after Rico Gathers went to the bench. Motley is a huge mismatch for teams, and that includes, you know, Big 12 teams that have size, because he's able to shoot it from the outside at a decent clip, and he's also just on the pick and roll, on the post. He's such a dangerous player around the basket. But you see in a lot of the games that Baylor loses, you have Motley not getting involved, and you see Medford trying to take it upon himself. And I think that that's where you're going to need to see Baylor improve, is making sure that the ball is moving.
Right. Well, then that's something that I've noticed, too, is Motley, Baylor is 7-0 when Motley scores at least 20 points. And those are the games where you see Medford's assist total, you know, likely in the double digits as well. And I think looking at Motley, he had Iowa State's number this season, right? He had seven offensive rebounds at Iowa State in January. But the flip side there, or I should say the downside, is that the Cyclones aren't a great rebounding team. So do you, this is starting to get veer into prediction territory a little bit, but given what you've seen from him this season, do you expect Motley specifically to do well against Yale, especially on the offensive glass? Because if he does, it's hard to see how.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that how he performs is going to really dictate this game, because I think that, you know, while Yale, again, is a very solid team, is a very disciplined team, I think that they don't have the top-end athleticism that, obviously, a guy like Jonathan Motley has. And so if you see Baylor try to get it to him early and try to get his confidence up, and try to get him moving towards the basket, I think that you're going to see Motley kind of start to take over this game, because he really is a guy who, I mean, is unlike what most college teams see. I mean, he's kind of I think he's a future NBA big man, and I think that he's something that most college teams don't know how to prepare for. And I think, like you said, when he starts getting to the basket, then he starts getting more active on both ends of the court, and he starts getting more active on the glass. And Baylor is an outstanding offensive rebounding team. And Rico Gathers, who again is now coming off the bench, has for the past 3 years really been one of the best offensive rebounders in the country. So if Baylor starts to create second shot opportunities for itself, that's really where the game can change, in my opinion.
Well, and especially given that Yale's calling card is their rebounding.
Right.
Yale has well above average size for an Ivy team down low. And they, you know, that's how they won a lot of games in the Ivies, is by pressing their size advantage down low. Can I ask sort of a more meta tournament question, which is,
sure.
You know, Yale is traveling about 90 miles, maybe less, I forget the exact distance, away from home in order to play this game. It's in Providence, which is the heart of, you know, that's an, you know, Brown is in Providence, it's an Ivy City. Baylor is getting on a plane and flying halfway across the country for this one. Is there any sense among Baylor fans about whether this was a fair draw for the Bears, whether this is a, you have any sense about how well the team's going to travel? I honestly don't know the answers to these questions.
Yeah. I can tell you, I ran the numbers yesterday. The arena that they're playing in is 103 miles from Yale's campus and 1,830 miles from Baylor's campus. So it's going to be a home court advantage, obviously, for Yale. And I do think that a lot of Baylor fans were upset by that, just because, again, Baylor doesn't have the biggest alumni base. There's a decent amount in New York, but other than that, I mean, they're really not that present in the Northeast. And I do think that this is going to be almost a Yale home game. I think that, you know, you've seen with some of the sales numbers with tickets that those people up in the Northeast are really starting to buy up those tickets. And I just don't think that Baylor really has the reach to even make it competitive. You know, so is it a fair draw? I mean, you know, when you're a five seed, you don't always get your pick of the litter. But I do think that, you know, one thing that's interesting is that Baylor was the best road team in the Big 12, and they were really very mediocre at home. I don't know necessarily that it'll end up mattering, but if Baylor were to lose the game, which I think is a possibility, then I think that that's something that people are going to really point to as, well, that wasn't fair. How could you give this team a home game when they're a 12 seed and make us travel all the way over there as a 5 seed?
And that just happened last year, too, right? I mean, with Baylor, didn't they play Georgia State in Georgia last year?
It was in I want to say it was in Jacksonville, yeah. And you know, again, that was a 3-14. And you would think at least for a 3 seed, you'd try a little bit harder than that. You know, and I don't think to a huge extent that that came up, the distance. But, you know, I mean, all things matter. I mean, and, you know, it must be somewhat discouraging to be a 3 seed or now a 5 seed and walk into an arena and see so many opposing fans in there. I mean, I'm not in the players' heads, but it has to play a part.
Well, I mean, I'll just say, well, two things, one of which is, let's not get carried away about the number of Yale fans that exist in the world. This is not a basketball team that's been good for very long.
For sure.
Unrelated, I just want to throw out, as always, you know, this live podcast. Feel free to tweet in questions or to send them in on Mixlr to @IvyHoopsOnline or to me @PFAndrews, and we'll be sure to ask them to Shayon while he's on the show, because, you know, we view this as a conduit sort of podcast. Robert hasn't said very much. I wanted to ask if you have any thoughts either for Shayon or just you want to throw out to the panel right now. Looks like we're having a little bit of technical.
I have a question for you.
Yeah. Come on. Someone said they had a question.
You hear wrong. That's my question in the void. It's happening. Kansas in December. The Crimson had that game tied at Allen Field. I'm doing so with this Peter. 135 remained. They lost. Right. Harvard and Kansas Baylor three times. That's point for being likely to take the thing to wire. Now that sounds like it, but what I want to get at is the definite. How wide is it between, you know, the big team opponents in the last 4 years? I mean, what should Ivy fans expect that gap to be in this matchup based on for NC Dutch? I think that's something that all Ivy fans should think about.
Well, I'm not sure what exactly you want Ivy fans to think about, because that entire question got mangled in the over the internet. I'm not sure. We seem to be having some problems with bandwidth right now. If everyone could do me a favor and just turn off your video, that usually seems to help matters. That would be Robert and Michael. Shayon, I'll just while we're fixing things, I'll ask. Are you going? I assume you're not traveling to this game. Do you know of any students who are?
I don't personally. I mean, there's obviously going to be some, but it's going to be individual. I mean, the one thing that is, and this probably wouldn't be on Thursday, is the potential of Duke in the second round. It's going to be kind of a big draw, and Baylor has some history with Duke back in 2010. A kind of blown charge slot call ended up costing potentially a trip to the Final Four. So I know that there's going to be people who are going to want to get out for that, but I don't really know of any students. There's no travel deals or anything like that.
Yeah, some of us in the Ivy League know all about block charge calls, but that's a whole different thing, Robert. Mike, sorry, do you want to say your question again?
Yeah. experience of watching Harvard in the tournament in the past 4 years and going against big name schools, was the gap in athleticism really that wide between the crew and the entire seeded opponent? Ivy fans had gap to be in this matchup based on what Robert and what we've all observed watching Harvard in the NCAA tournament the past few years.
Sorry, so you asked only that part of it.
All right, you know what? I'm sorry.
Well, maybe I should answer my own question.
Yeah, why don't you answer your own question, Mike?
I mean, I think that Baylor might be a special case because the Big 12 is the most elite of conferences this year. But, you know, I think this is – Ken Palm has this being a toss-up, pretty much a tough game. It's ranked third in the 14 Thursday games in terms of thrill score and what Ken Palm expects. I think they project – score is how much of a thrill you're going to get from watching the game, Peter. Even Ken Palm can even project your emotions. How about that?
This is why I hate the statistical people on our show. You're telling me that Ken Palm knows how much thrills I'm going to get. What if I don't like either of these teams? I won't be thrilled by that.
Well, you could check out the Columbia Norfolk State thrill score, too. I'm sure it's there. We can get to that later in the show. But, I mean, I think that, you know, I don't think the gap is quite that wide. I think that there certainly is when you're talking about the non-producers on Yale's team. I think the bottom line is the gap isn't that wide. Everyone's projecting this to be a very close, typically close 5-12 matchup. It's almost like the NCAA selection committee, you know, took a break from screwing the mid-majors and said, oh, let's pit two teams that mirror each other against each other with Yale and Baylor, because they're really both so similar as far as already mentioned the offensive rebounding. You know, they don't rely on very many bench minutes or significant three-point production, neither of these teams. Both teams struggle with turnovers. So, you know, it's almost as if they said, oh, Baylor is the Big 12 version of Yale, and Yale is the Ivy League version of Baylor. Let's match them up. I mean, the significant difference that Shahan pointed to was, you know, Yale mainly plays man, and Baylor's got that fluid zone that they go with that's been very successful, and that's the contrast to really mine here.
All right, so I think we've beaten this horse into the ground. We're going to go around the panel, and everyone's going to give me a prediction for this game. And I'm going to have Shahan go after Mike and Robert, just so you can hear a little bit about how we see Yale fitting into this. And I'll go last because my prediction is always rather less measured than the others. Robert, what are your thoughts on how this one's going to shake out? Robert does not appear to be with us anymore.
The suspense is killing me.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on. Well, all right, Robert, if you return, yell at me, and we'll get back to you. Mike, what's your prediction for this one?
I think whoever's hotter from deep wins. I mean, both teams aren't even in the top 250 nationally when it comes to three-pointers as a distribution of total points, but all it's going to take is a three here, three there. If whether it comes from Mekhi Mason or Lester Medford, I guess we'll find out. I think Yale pulls it out against what has been a somewhat susceptible Baylor three-point defense in that zone, because the Bulldogs always beat the Bears in Providence, just a different Bear.
All right, Robert. It's always whenever I try to have fun and cool guests on that the podcast inevitably breaks down into a horrible failure zone. I'm not even kidding. This is what happened. You know, we tried to have Michael James on and Ivy Beeble, Jonathan Tannenwald on earlier this year, and it turned into the worst podcast that has ever been produced by anyone. So I apologize to our listeners. Robert, I'll give you one more chance to try to say something.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Robert's here. All right, what's your prediction for this one?
Okay, my prediction, it was pretty similar to Mike's when I started talking and barely couldn't hear me, but basically I just think it's going to be a close game. If Yale can hit some shots from the outside in the final minutes, they'll pull it out. Give me a Mekhi Mason 3 at the buzzer, rims out, Baylor wins by 2.
All right, so, well, I mean, I'm glad that you agree with my opinion that Mekhi Mason is not a very good basketball player. All right, Shehan, what's your take on all this?
So I think that the difference is going to have to come on the boards. I think that whoever creates the most second chance opportunities for itself, whoever ends up taking the most shots, is probably going to be the team that ends up winning. You know, I think that looking at Baylor, this is the team that last year did lose, a game that they were very much favored in. And I think that because of that, they won't necessarily... You know, because I think that one thing that a lot of people were talking about on this end was overlooking Yale and looking to Duke. And I think that absolutely could be a factor. But I think that after what happened last year, that I think they're going to come in pretty focused. I think that they've been battle tested. And so I think that Baylor ends up, I think that it's close through most of the game. And I think that Baylor pulls away in maybe the final 5 minutes to win by 8 or 10 points.
So I think that I agree with you that the key to this game is going to come down to who can control the boards. Because within the Ivy League, it can be very difficult to get a sense sometimes of how players translate to the national stage. And Justin Sears and Brandon Sherrod have been a very impressive front court pairing for the Bulldogs this year. But now, does that mean that the two of them are good enough to match up against the ferocious front court of the Bears is a totally different question. And... I'm picking Yale, actually, because I have a weird feeling, and I make all my decisions about these things based solely on weird feelings. And I had one final question I wanted to ask Shehan about this matchup, which is the following. So in previous years, you know, there's always a debate when you're at a mid-major conference about whether you should support the representative of your league in the tournament. So last year, Mike and I wrote a piece where Mike argued that, you know, it was every Ivy fan's duty to support Harvard, and I argued that I would not root for Harvard if they were playing the team from hell, which was a strong take, but one I stand by. And so I wanted to ask you, not so much for your thoughts on whether or not we should root for Yale, but if an Ivy fan wants to root for Baylor, why should they? What is it about Baylor that's compelling and makes them worth rooting for?
Right. Well, I think in a lot of ways, Baylor, in the context of the national scene, is the underdog, especially when it comes to basketball. Now, maybe the football, you know, the prominence has taken that away. But, you know, when you look in the context of the Big 12, Baylor's one of the smallest schools. They have one of the smallest basketball budgets. You know, very recently, they were an absolute joke of a program. And you look at what Scott Drew's done there, I think that you have to be impressed with taking a program that had never made back-to-back tournaments ever, and he just qualified for 3 straight with this team, and I think it's 4 of the last 5. You know, this is a team with guys who, you know, there's some top recruits on there, but Taurean Prince was very under-recruited. He was signed with Long Island Brooklyn before they lost their coach and his scholarship opened back up. So this is a team, you know, in the context, obviously, of major schools that has overachieved, that has guys who weren't always the top prospects and has a coach that really consistently hasn't gotten the sort of respect that I do believe he deserves. And, you know, so it's not like you're rooting for Kansas. It's not like you're rooting for Kentucky. You know, this is a team that, you know, is Waco, Texas, from, you know, a 13,000 person Baptist school. You know, this isn't you rooting for Goliath. You know, this isn't obviously them, you rooting for David either. But I think that at the same time, you see this as the type of team, the type of school, the type of program that really has beaten the odds.
I think that's compelling. Let me ask Robert Crawford, who covers Harvard, which is in many ways Yale's arch nemesis. Let me put the question to you. Who are you rooting for?
I am definitely rooting for Yale. I have to say, I think wins in the NCAA tournament really elevates the league, and even if I was just rooting for Harvard, it would elevate Harvard to have Yale win, because then it gives Harvard, it elevates them when they end up winning the Ivy League, because you just have to root for the whole league to be better, because then when your favorite team wins, it's a lot more meaningful, in my opinion.
And Mike, do you stand by your opinion from last year that we should all root for Yale?
Yeah, I think Columbia's bad karma against Princeton this year is from you rooting against Harvard in the tournament last year, Peter. I think that's the only
I'm pretty sure that that's a malarkey explanation from you, Mike.
I'm pretty sure you've been pointing to the devil to take the heat off yourself. I think that's what this is all about.
Well, obviously that's nonsense. I think it's tough. I actually haven't decided. You know, it's one of these things where a lot of the times, I think anyone who's a sports fan will tell you, if you sometimes sit down and watch a neutral game, it's not until you start watching the game that you realize that you have a subconscious bias one way or another. What I can tell you is that if it turns out to be Yale against Duke or Baylor against Duke, I'm not rooting for Duke. So I think we can probably all agree on that one.
Hey, just jumping in, I can tell you, maybe more from football than from basketball, but when Baylor and Iowa State both lost the tournament last year, it really does affect the perception of your league. And I think that while you might not see the returns this year of, you know, for example, Harvard being really good or Yale being really good in this year's tournament, I think that it changes the perception of the league. And I think that, obviously, historically, only the champion has gotten in, but I think that if you have a Harvard team and a Yale team that are both this kind of level, and if you win a game, you know, that really changes some things. If you can see that teams from this league are competitive against teams from other leagues.
So Shehan is on hashtag 2BitIvy without even knowing about it.
This is a Baylor student, too. I mean, hey, give me some credit.
Yeah. Well, no. I do give you a lot of credit. I will say it is an interesting question to me, because I don't know, like, I don't even know how to evaluate that, because I think there's a part of me that says, you know, in 2010, Cornell was in the Sweet 16. Harvard won 2 games in 3 years in the tournament and played North Carolina down to the wire. Last year, they played Michigan State to the wire a couple years ago. How much have we really seen that translated as respect for the Ivy League? How much have we really seen that translated as respect for mid-majors? I don't know the answer to that, because I do think that Yale's a popular upset pick, and I do think people are pointing to the success of Harvard in the past, and Cornell is a reason for that. On the other hand, I don't know how much that matters to me. I don't know how much it matters to me that if Columbia were to ever make the tournament, they would then be taken seriously by the establishment. All I would care about was that they had won the Ivy League and that they would go out and perform for themselves. So I don't know how much this metagame about, like, what we're hoping to get out of the league colors my choice of, you know, when I sit down, will I want Justin Sears to put the ball in the basket or have his shot blocked? I don't know the answer to that question. I don't know the answer to that question.
Hey, and I can tell you with football, you know, obviously this is a little bit different, but, you know, Baylor obviously has their kind of high-profile rivalry with TCU, and you see TCU win the Alamo Bowl, and, you know, you feel great about the Big 12 for a second, but then you have to hear about it all off-season, too. So, you know, it's a mixed bag.
Yeah, that's kind of my take on it. I think that's pretty much all everyone has to say about Yale versus Baylor, unless anyone else has a final thought on that one.
No, I think that just Yale, can they shoot and break that zone? They've shown in some games this year that they can do that, particularly talking about SMU. But, you know, it comes down to Mekhi Mason. Can he shoot? Can these guards for Yale, break the zone? They've averaged around 24, 25 threes against zone teams this year, so you might see more of that.
you know, whoever's hot's going to win, and we know that anyway. So
wait, if whoever hot's going to win, then why do we even have this show?
My head just exploded.
Sorry to do that to you, Mike. Yeah, I mean,
why is anyone ever on the Vine?
That's I don't know, question. Man. It's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to Thursday and Friday. It's two of the best days of the year in sports. I don't know, Shehan, any other Big 12 matchups that you're keeping your eye on this weekend, or are you pretty much locked in on Baylor?
Well, in the short term, I'm definitely locked in on Baylor. But I think that the other thing to look at, well, Kansas is my title pick, you know, and I think that you'll learn a lot about, well, again, Kansas has also been a team that's often been an early out. So I think that we'll learn some things there. I think that this is a weird side of the bracket for us because we have played several of the teams in this region already. We have Oklahoma, Texas, Texas A&M, and Oregon all in the bracket. I know you guys played Duke earlier in the year, or you guys being Yale, of course. I don't know. It's weird that they set up so many potential rematches to me.
And I wanted to ask you, just as someone who's seen Oklahoma play, I did my bracket today, and I had Oklahoma in the Final Four.
Sure.
Am I crazy?
No. I mean, you know, I think that one thing that I've said in the past, that and I didn't pick Oklahoma. I had Oklahoma going out to Texas A&M because I don't know. I'm not an Aggie person, but I don't know. I just like what they have going on there a little bit. But if we've learned one thing from the tournament in the past, sometimes just having the best player wins. And to me, I think Buddy Hield is the best player in the country. And, you know, maybe he'll flame out and prove me wrong. But until he does, I mean, I'm not betting against him.
All right. So I think that just about does it for our look at the NCAA tournament. And we'll move on now to the other Ivy postseason teams. Let's talk Princeton, who will be in the NIT tomorrow against Virginia Tech at Virginia Tech. Got a sixth seed for the tournament. Bit of a surprise there. Mike Toney, your early thoughts about Princeton seeding for the NIT and the matchup.
Yeah, I don't know why Princeton was made a sixth seed. That doesn't make any sense to me. It's a thing that makes clear that the Tigers were nowhere near the NCAA bubble that was talked about, you know, down the stretch, and probably wouldn't have even been on it in earnest had they forced a playoff game with Yale, which is ridiculous but not surprising given how shoddily the selection committee assembled the rest of their bracket. I think any given five-player lineup of On the Vine guests we've had on the show this season should have gotten an NCAA tournament slot before Tulsa did. Because we were projected in the same number of brackets before the bracket came out in earnest, and that was zero. Oh, anyway, it has to be noted that Princeton is objectively one of the best teams in the NIT by any so-called objective measure. RPI stands for really pretty ignorant, KenPom, whatever you look at. I mean,
just want to interject to say, I like that Mike reserves, I have a lot of bile for like teams and stuff. Mike really hates on metrics that he doesn't like. Mike went off on a rant last week about the selection process. Now he's coming up with fancy acronyms to make fun of the RPI. I like this side of you, Mike. You need to lead into it.
Yes, I don't like the, it's my sense of fair play, man. I can't hate on people. I hate on numbers instead. So that's what I do. But Princeton is, I think they're right to pull off some upsets here. Virginia Tech is very good at getting to the free throw line. The Hokies rank second in the nation in percentage of points scored at the free throw line. And all Ivy fans know, on the other hand, that Princeton is very good at not fouling, or at least not getting called for fouls, depending on wherever your fandom lies there. So I think the Tigers are built to handle a defensively intense team like the Hokies, because Princeton's got a motion offense full of versatile guys who can be ball handlers, slashers, spot up shooters, whatever you'd like, or whatever Mitch Henderson would like, I should say.
Yeah, I mean, I really think this is as favorable of a matchup as you'll see for a number six seed in the NIT, even on Virginia Tech's home floor. So, yeah, I mean, I kind of like the Tigers in this one.
Robert, you have any thoughts about the NIT?
Yeah, I agree with Mike. I think it's definitely plays into Princeton's hands that they don't foul a lot, but it's also really tough because they don't have the same, don't really have depth at big man, really. They have Pete Miller, and then Alec Brennan, I guess, is the backup center or power forward, and he hasn't played really many minutes at all in the last couple games. And in the last two games that Virginia Tech has played, a combined five players have fouled out on opponents. So I think this game goes well for Princeton, but I'm worried that if some of their big men get in foul trouble, it could be dangerous. But I do agree. I think it's a pretty favorable matchup. It's really tough to be on the away court, especially after a great season like that. But I think it does match up well for Princeton, and if they can stay out of foul trouble, they'll be in good position.
My take on this, I think Princeton's going to win. As per usual, I have an insane reason for believing that to be true. It seems to me that I've been talking for a long time about the various illicit bargains that Princeton had to make to even finish 12-2 this season. And I think that one possible way that the devil has been able to get out of the deal near the end here is by letting Princeton make a deep run in the NIT. So that would not shock me at all. Princeton is a good team. They are criminally underrated by the selection committee. It'll be interesting to see what they do. If nothing else, it'll make Toothless Tiger's head explode one way or another. Sorry we couldn't have him on the show to get his take on the Tigres. So that's tomorrow night in regular Virginia. Also, good time to note, we were talking a little bit about hashtag 2BidIvy earlier. It happened just on the women's side. Two different teams from the Ivy League will be in the women's tournament. Penn Quakers got the automatic bid by sweeping the Princeton in the regular season. They will be up against number 7 Washington. Penn is a 10 seed, and that's in Maryland. So Washington's going to have to fly all the way across the country. I think that's a pretty good draw for Penn. And then, shockingly, Princeton gets an 11 seed, and they'll be going up against West Virginia. That's an at-large bid into the tournament for the Princeton Tigers. The final season without a conference tournament ends with 2BidIvy finally coming to fruition, not the way anyone really anticipated, but certainly a good moment for people who follow the Ivy women's side, and good luck to both of those teams. I don't know if Mike, Robert had any thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice to see that could happen without a conference tournament now that doing it the right way is gone.
It's also, build off of that point, it's tough to see the Ivy League getting 2 bids on the men's side. Even with the conference tournament, teams like St. Mary's, Monmouth are getting snubbed. It's just further evidence. I haven't liked the conference tournament from the start, but I just find it hard to envision that the Ivy League gets 2 bids with this selection committee.
Yeah, that's been my argument more or less the entire time. But we'll see. Yeah. Should be fun next year. The last postseason game, which is actually, I think, first chronologically, is tomorrow night in Levian Gymnasium, I believe it's 7:30. The Columbia Lions, 10-4, something like 22-10 on the season, will be hosting Norfolk State in the first round of the CollegeInsider.com tournament. Should be fun, and by fun I mean I like watching my Columbia Lions play. Norfolk State is not very good. There's something like KenPom 220, 225. They finished second in the MEAC this year. I would have come up with an abbreviation to make fun of the MEAC. I didn't think of it until just now. Suffice to say, it's not a very good basketball conference. And I think Columbia should win this one handily. The CIT field is fine, but it's not incredibly deep because you had to put 64 teams in the NCAA tournament and then another 32 in the NIT. So what you've got left, Columbia sitting at about KenPom 115, I think it is. They're in good shape to make hopefully a deep run into this tournament. I'd love to see them get the second round matchup against the winner of the Boston U Fordham game if they can get past Norfolk State. But they should be heavy favorites, and hopefully it goes very smoothly for the Lions. as they get this one started. Any thoughts from anyone about the CIT?
It'd be great to see the Lions win it all and send this, you know, a really, really good, resilient group of senior Lions who Peter knows very well off the way that they, you know, deserve for being so loyal and resilient. I would love to see that. I would love to see nothing more than Columbia to cap that off, and they can certainly do it given the field.
And one last thing I'll say about Columbia for those of you looking for a good story. I call Maldo Lowe the chairman. That's his nickname. Everyone calls him the chairman. For those curious about how that name came about, the Columbia student publication Blog did a really interesting piece last week, which sort of traced the origin of that nickname. Full disclosure, they concluded that I was partly responsible for it, which I think is accurate. But it was the sort of genesis of how people in the marching band cooked up the name, including myself, and then people outside the band, including myself, disseminated into the world. I will actually be never, no matter what I accomplish in my life or career, never be proud of anything than having given Maldo Lowe the nickname of the chairman, a nickname that it turns out he doesn't even like.
Ooh.
I mean, I well, guess you know, being compared to Chairman Mao isn't as flattering as you'd think, but...
No. Think about the nickname. And
it's a
think
great,
about what...
It's a great nickname. There's a highlight on the Ivy League Digital Network calling him the Chairman of Broken Ankles, which is just beautiful. It's like a, it's like a children's fantasy book. Like a really dark one.
Yeah. One of those Austrian fairy tales that just veers off into gruesome territory.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That ends up poorly for everyone involved. Let's touch on a few things very quickly at the end as we wrap up a little bit early here. The topic that we've touched on for the last couple podcasts, because it's been relevant, is, of course, the issue of sexual violence as it relates to the Ivy League basketball and sexual harassment. A couple notes, we'll just say them. It did come out this week. Jack Montague, the former Yale captain who was expelled for an incident of sexual misconduct, planning on suing the school. There's developments in that, you know, at this point. We're the legal process is taking over, and that's... obviously a tough situation, and we'll just reiterate, you know, what we've said before, which is that hope it gets taken care of properly. Related to that, an assistant coach who many people had their eye on for various vacancies in the Ivy League, former Harvard assistant coach responsible for bringing in Jeremy Lin, is Jan Huffnagel, who was he was a assistant coach here at Berkeley, University of California. But he was fired yesterday, just 3 days before they were to start a trip into the tournament as a 4 seed. Huffnagel was accused of sexual harassment. The complaint and the report by Berkeley was issued today. Huffnagel admits sexually harassing a reporter. I don't really see two ways around it if you read the testimony that's in the Berkeley report. So he's been fired, and one would have to imagine that it will be tough for him to continue his rise in the coaching career anytime soon. Again, unacceptable behavior, and the sort of thing that I think we're all glad that is being taken more seriously. And then just on the topic of firings, Bill Courtney, who we thought was probably on his way out of Cornell, is out of Cornell. He was let go yesterday. To some sadness from Cornell players, maybe not so much from... the fans who had seen a struggling program. I want to get more deeply into this when we have our season wrap up next week. But Mike, Robert, any quick thoughts on the Bill Courtney firing?
The writing was on the wall for that one, and there's we'll get into it. But you can't go 6 years without a postseason tournament appearance, and you know losing 113 games in 6 years isn't going to cut it. He, by all accounts, a very, very nice stand-up man. Hard to see him let go, but you know, this seemed to be the time for Cornell to move forward and give someone a contract who can come in as a head coach rather than renewing Courtney's. So, Andy Nolan doing what seemed to have to be done there.
Yep, I agree. It's kind of baffling to me that Bill Courtney can fire guys like Matt Morgan and Sean Miller, who's now at UConn, one of their best players, but he can find those guys steal them from the clutches of D2 schools, but not able to win. So it's an unfortunate situation, but like Mike said, seemed like it had to happen.
Yeah, I was actually surprised he hung under his job a couple years ago, and he went 2-28. And it'll be interesting to see where Cornell goes from here. But we'll touch on that. We'll do a season wrap-up show next week, assuming, of course, that all the teams are done. It's possible that we could have as many as 3 teams still playing basketball at this time next week. Unlikely, but certainly plausible. That just about does it for this episode of On the Vine, as we did our NCAA preview. I want to say a big thank you for providing some really great commentary on Baylor, for jumping on Team #2BitIvy, and for generally being a really good sport about having to listen to me for 50 minutes. Shehan, thank you so much for coming on the show. Why don't you tell us where we can find your work, especially on Thursday?
Yeah, so you can find my work at sportsdaydfw.com. I'll be writing some stuff around the tournament. And you can follow me on Twitter to get all the stuff that I publish. So it's at Shehan Jeyaraja, S-H-E-H-A-N, and then J-E-Y-A-R-A-J-A-H.
The official Ivy Hoops Online Twitter account has tweeted that name out, too, if you want to just follow him from there. We're, of course, at Ivy Hoops Online. So thank you very much, Shehan, for coming on the show, and good luck to Baylor on Thursday and beyond.
Thanks for having me, and good luck to all you guys.
We want to say a big On the Vine thank you to Robert Crawford for coming on the show. Thank you so much, Robert.
Oh, thank you. Also want to let you know I will be rooting for Columbia, so keep that in mind.
That's great.
Next time.
Do not ever expect reciprocity on that point. thank you, Robert. And, of course, to the president of On the Vine, of the Ivy Hoops Online website. He's the editor-in-chief. He keeps the show going. Mike Tony, thank you, as always, for coming on the show. We're really looking forward to the tournament, aren't we?
We are. And I'm really looking forward to you calling me the chairman someday, Peter.
Well, go score 1,500 points for Columbia, and we'll talk.
That's fair, Peter.
This has been On the Vine. We'll be back sometime next week with a recap of everything that's happened in the postseason, either a season wrap-up show or looking ahead to what might come. Two of the best days in the entire sports calendar coming this weekend, Thursday and Friday's NCAA tournament matchups. Looking forward to seeing you there. I've been Peter Andrews. Thank you so much for listening, and have a good evening.